land to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 211, wherein we talk with Lindsay Hansen Park. And I always want to call you Lindsay Park Hansen, but that's not it. It's Lindsay Hansen Park.
You know, it doesn't matter much.
Really?
It's all interchangeable. You can call me Park Lindsay.
Is it? That sounds like a whole different thing. Like if you ever had a clothing line, Park Lindsay. That's great.
Yeah. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
It's hip and confusing.
You are many things to many people. Let me see if I can get it. You work with Sunstone. You are a Sunstone.
Assistant director. Yeah.
Okay. You also are the host of the
Feminist Mormon Housewives podcast.
Uh-huh. And this something else, right?
Year of Polygamy.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And that's the year of polygamy is over, right?
Yes.
Now it's the year of bigamy, which I love. Yeah. The sequel was so
year
much
of
better.
Bigamy. It's the year of monogamy. I'm sorry.
Oh, is it?
Sorry to disappoint.
I want to ask you this. The year of polygamy. Tell people about that if they've never heard of it.
Yeah. So I host a podcast called Feminist Mormon Housewives Podcast, and we do series on the podcast, and so one of our series was going to be called The Year of Polygamy, where I was going to spend a year
being a polygamist, which is bold.
That's what everybody thought, and I should have been more careful in the naming of that, turns out, because that was not the plan. It was just to spend a year covering the history of Mormon polygamy from the beginning of, like, the inception, the very roots of Mormon polygamy to current day. And so we started the series. We got about 34 episodes into it when it just, like, exploded, took off. You know, New York Times tweeted about it, compared it to Serial, which was really cool. And just, like, it just exploded. So we turned it into its own podcast. We went a little bit over a year.
Mm-hmm.
It was a year and a half, but here's my justification. We did 100 episodes of Mormon polygamy, and I figure as long as I'm under 365, then I stick to my name.
Yeah, then it's justified. That's fine.
Exactly.
It's that sweet Mormon justification where you just go,
it's letter, spirit of the law type thing.
Yeah, 100. It was a decade, a century. It doesn't matter. You know what? You got your episodes.
And I think people wish that I would keep talking about it because there's so much to talk about, and sometimes I'm like, oh, man, if I could just talk about this. But there gets to be a point where you don't want to be that person that's still talking about polygamy after 100 episodes.
Hey, do you see this drum I'm continually beating?
Well, it's already to the point where, like, even my sweet mother-in-law was like, so, Lindsay, like, you don't want to live polygamy, right? Like, that's not what you're doing. And I'm like, no. I'm researching it.
Like, you keep bringing women around for my son.
They're
and,
like, there's a lot of... Or I'll say, like, here's the thing. A lot of friends that I grew up with, they don't know what I do, but they'll be like, Lindsay's into polygamy. And I'm like, don't say it like that.
Please, not that introduction.
That's not exactly what I'm doing, but... I'm not a polygamist.
No.
I grew up in the LDS church.
Never been a polygamist?
Never been. Never planned to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So the reason why I started it, do you want to hear about
it? Yeah, please.
So
I wouldn't ask questions if I didn't want to know.
Well, good.
I just don't. I'm just not that nice. So anything that I ask you is something I genuinely want to know.
You're asking out of malice is what you're saying.
Yes. I maliciously would like to know.
Good. I will tell you as sweetly as possible then. So I grew up in the LDS church. And like most Mormon women, polygamy was like not something we talked about, but it was always kind of like a joke or something looming in the shadows.
Like, hey, I'm here at the ward and I'm picking out my seven for heaven.
Exactly.
Right.
Seven for heaven. You know, in all this time of polygamy, I've never heard that one.
Yeah. You know what? That's my podcast about polygamy.
Seven for heaven.
And it's just seven episodes and it's women that I'd love to marry. Yeah, welcome back to my seven
some
for heaven.
Friends you can meet. So
this is episode number two, by the way. I'm kidding.
Lucky me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
lucky you. Sure.
I just like it was something that we talked about, and in my own family, like my mom had like this weird rationalization for it.
Your mom's LDS, and
my mom, very, very Orthodox, and so. I just kind of grew up thinking about it. I knew about Brigham Young. My mom's a public historian. She dresses up in pioneer dresses.
She's a reenactor?
Kind of, yeah. And she goes
awesome.
To, like, you know, youth conferences and, like, city libraries and schools and, like, tells pioneer history, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I grew up doing that. I grew up, like, dressing in pioneer
clothing.
You're like,
everyone doesn't do this?
We'd be, like, in the Smith's parking lot, like... After we just bought some cornbread for her presentation, and everyone's like, those guys are real extreme polygamists.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on with that? So that's really my only foray into polygamy but as a child. But I knew about it with Brigham Young.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. That's just, you know, the story of what we did. But I didn't know about Joseph Smith.
Sure. You were in a group with a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recognize that this is not the story for a lot of people. A lot of people just like knew Joseph was a polygamist, just like they knew Brooklyn.
Yeah, or they kind of, you know, you just kind of knew, oh yeah, Joseph Smith was a polygamist, had more than one wife, but maybe you didn't know the severity or the...
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I didn't know anything about it. So I was, it was when I first got married as a young newlywed. Now, the story...
How old are we talking when you got married?
Really young.
Child bride?
Just about. I was 19.
Okay.
When
so
I got engaged.
Still.
Yeah, but I was, what had happened was I was waiting for a missionary, crazy about this guy.
Yeah.
Meet my husband. Feel
Not
torn.
So crazy about that guy anymore.
Yeah. No, my husband's great. But they, like, everyone in the ward was like, who's she going to pick?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was this, and it was like fun for them, but ridiculously painful for me. I was young and didn't know what to do. And for some reason thought it had to be like either or, you know, like
yeah.
No one was like,
it couldn't
19.
Be both polygamy for you. What?
And that, well, that's just it. So it was this really hard decision. I did not do it well. I did it very poorly, hurt everybody involved. And I remember thinking, this is so not fair, because I was like, it was like a month into my marriage and my husband made some dumb joke, like I was cooking or something. And he was like, don't screw it up, because in the next life I could find a wife that could do it better.
Way to go. Classy husband line.
I know. It's so classy.
Wives appreciate that.
Really great joke. So funny. So I was like, ha ha ha. But internally I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Of course. And then it just made me insecure. I thought, oh man, like that, I have to step up in everything, like in bed, like with cooking. I have to be the better parent, because I can't be the, like, I don't want to be the subpar wife.
Sure.
And it just, it started to canker with me to think, like, I had to sacrifice, like, these two people that I loved, like, this relationship, and hurt people. And my husband someday, it won't ever be difficult for him. He'll just, like, be assigned another woman in the next life, and no big deal, and
right.
That's what we do. But I had to struggle and sacrifice, and it was painful, and I started to resent it. But, of course, there was nowhere for that resentment to go, so
right.
You just kind of...
You just bury that down.
Bury it down like a good Mormon woman.
Cram. I think Mormon men do it too. Maybe not on this particular subject, but we're all prone to just be like, hey, let's find a nice place for that to hide for years. Fester.
It's really healthy, and then you someday start a podcast. So.
Yeah. Side note, not really healthy.
Not really healthy. Don't do that. So, well, I wouldn't recommend what I did either, which is, I think it was... Do you remember when the Baptists came to Utah and they
yes.
were like going to convert us? And it
yeah,
was a big
coming
deal.
Door to door, big deal.
That's the one.
Be nice to them when they come to the door. I remember this.
Yeah,
scary
and we were kind of like excited about it, but like, oh, the Baptists—they're out to get us.
Uh-huh.
So they had done this thing where they had made this anti-Mormon documentary, and they were going to send it to random people in the mail. And we actually got the documentary in our mail. And I remember, because I had heard about it on the news or something, I don't remember. And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, we got the documentary. But I knew it was bad, so I threw it in the trash.
Sure.
But I had gotten an email from Meridian Magazine or one of the LDS emails saying like, if you want to know what's on the documentary and not watch it, go to fairlds.com or whatever. And I was like, oh, don't know what that is, but...
But I'll check it out.
I'll check it out. It looks safe. These people are saying it's okay. So check it out. They have like the 10 bullet points of like Joseph Smith was a fraud, you know, all these things. So I'm reading it, not very interested. And in the column, I see something about polygamy. And I'm like, well, what is this? So I click on it. And that just like blew my world open. Like Joseph Smith was a polygamist? What? I never heard that.
Wait a minute.
And, you know, there's this controversy that some of the women were married to other men. What is that about? You know, like just crazy, crazy stuff. And so I like you do that thing where you like binge on the information.
Sure. Because it's things that you feel like being a member of the church your whole life. You feel like you, although you obviously know cognitively that you don't know it all, you feel like you should know it all. Like that there at some point in your life, there shouldn't be any surprises.
Well, and I felt pretty well versed in Mormon history, at least I thought, because I mean, my childhood, my mom, to her credit, like I know a lot of stories of Mormon women and their pioneer experience. Mm-hmm. Like my mom and grandmother are members of the Daughters of Utah Pioneers. And I remember them hosting meetings and would go to the museum. I felt like I had a decent handle, and I like to study and read, but this was just way out of like anything I had ever thought. And it was like several years of that, like, because I knew that this wasn't something, like, I knew enough to know that you don't talk about this, like there was a reason I didn't know about it. And it festered more and more. And eventually, I found feminist Mormon housewives, you know. And
so this is what year? Give me an idea where we're talking.
I want to say, so I started blogging officially in 2010. So it's probably in 2008.
This is, so this is not distant past.
No. Not distant past. Like, I'm trying to think. It was probably a few years into my marriage when I had found it. And I started to get more and more angry. But when I would try to talk to my husband about it, he was like, don't talk about that. You know, I served a mission and I know what anti is and you're just being fooled. I tried to talk to my family about it. And, you know, they would say, like, you're being selfish. Like, of course, that's something that you're going to be okay with in the next life. Stop worrying about it. And, of course, that's, like, not how it works. Because I started to realize something very painfully that I just sort of held on to, which is, I'm so fundamentally against this idea of being a polygamist in heaven that if I'm going to somehow be okay with it in the next life, something fundamental about me will have to change and it won't be me anymore. So what's the point?
Yeah. You know? And the whole thing is that we're taught that we're the same in heaven as we are here on earth, right? It's just an expansion. It's not change.
And you know, they talk about, you know, if you have a cigarette addiction that you're going to feel those temptations. And so the way I was internalizing this is this was like Satan and a temptation and something negative, and I didn't see myself resolving it. So I felt like, you know, this was my weakness or my flaw or my propensity towards sin, and I didn't see that going away. So I'm like, well, I guess I'm just going to have to be like an administering angel or something.
Right.
So I remember telling my husband, I was like, you need to divorce me because I can't stop researching. I'm addicted to researching.
What are you doing on that computer? Nothing. Nothing.
That was exactly how it felt. I was like, I know it's wrong.
Was it really genuinely a conversation where you said you need to divorce me?
100%. I remember we were actually driving past the Great Salt Lake. It was nighttime. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I don't know what you're doing. This is like our eternal family. You can stop. Of course you can stop. You have control over this. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I can't stop. I'm going down this road. Like, I know that I am. I wish that I weren't. Mm-hmm. If I could stop, tell me how to stop. And he's like, just don't get on the computer. I'm like, you don't understand. My heart is changing.
Right.
And that's kind of where I had resigned myself to, that I knew enough about the issue now at this point that I knew I disagreed with it. Mm-hmm. And to be in disagreement with something that I was taught, like, was my future, was heaven. Mm-hmm. It was, I just knew, like, that must mean that I go to a lower kingdom. And, like, you just got to get used to that now. Like, you have to be used to being that person.
Right.
And so,
on a lighter note, you get away with a lot of stuff if you know you're going to a lesser kingdom.
You know what? That's what I was thinking. Woo! I was like, wait a minute. Johnny Depp's not going to be in the celestial kingdom. I think I can handle that.
Think of all the great rock bands that are going to be hanging out in T-Lush.
Oh, man. Like, what? I think we got it all wrong. Like, polygamy and, like, all that stuff and the white clothes. That doesn't sound fun. Yeah. But so, yeah, it started with that. Then I found Feminist Mormon Housewives, and they were like the first people ever to be like, oh, yeah, Joseph Smith, that sucked that he lied to Emma. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you can say that? Mm-hmm. You can say that, and it's not like a sin. And, yeah, they were like faithful women, and they're like, oh, yeah, we think it's garbage. Polygamy's garbage, but, you know, we still love the church. So they were the first people that did that. And I really feel like if I didn't have that, if I didn't have affirming members of the church telling me, like, your doubts are spot on, and we love you still, and we still claim you, that I probably be, like, I really get why people are angry ex-Mormons that, like, can't give it up and, like, rage. And because when you're in such pain and you feel so isolated from a community that you got, that you derived almost everything from, to have that rejection and feel like you can't stop and to have them turn their backs on that pain and to not want to understand is the darkest feeling ever, you know? And that's kind of where I was at. I thought, you know, if hell is, if heaven is polygamy, well, that's my hell. Like, I know what that's like. I'm living like this, just with this fear of it. And so, like, that's no heaven for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And then at that point, it really does probably bring into question, you know, not necessarily behavior, but certainly the whole point or purpose of this life. If you're not, if the desire isn't to go to this heaven as it's portrayed, it's like, well, shoot, what am I, am I doing?
That's exactly it. And then, you know, I started, it makes you think about heaven, and I was like, oh, there's kingdoms and thrones, and like, that's not for me. Like, yeah. I couldn't be happy if there were like servants. That's like, I know a lot of people could. I know. But I was like, that's just not how I am. So I found Femmes Warren Housewives, worked out a lot of my anger. If you read my early blogs, they are angry.
Yeah.
And,
fierce,
okay.
One might say.
Fierce,
they are fiercely driven.
It's so funny because people will look back and they're like, those aren't angry at all. But I just felt so much anger. And it felt so wicked.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To even criticize anything.
Sure.
But it was so good for me. And so then I started the podcast and then we started the series. And I was naive. I said in the very first episode, you hear me be like, okay, guys, like, all you need to know is more information. Like, if you just dive in, like, we're going to learn about it. It's going to be uncomfortable, but it's going to be okay. Like, because I really believed, based on what I knew, and at this point, I had done a blog series on Joseph's wife. So I knew enough. Like, mm-hmm. I knew enough to know, like, it's not pretty. But doing that gave me some peace about the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me permission to sort of claim, like, well, maybe this was a mistake, you know? And so I really believe that if I could give that gift to other women to let them explore that,
sure.
Maybe they could give themselves permission to either believe it or to not believe it, but it would be their choice, mm-hmm. right? So I thought that, and I promised that, and turns out, like, so wrong. So the podcast is me, like, my journey, me going like, oh no, this is so much worse than I thought. Oh no, it's so much worse.
Mm-hmm.
And, we do Joseph Smith's wives, and then after 34 episodes, we get into the frontier
period.
There's
more than 34 wives.
Yeah, and we cover, so... The issue with the podcast is I'm always trying to be upfront with my biases, and I know everybody says that, but
sure.
It was really important for me to, as a public historian, to like say, okay, this is what one has like document says. This is what one another document says. Like, we don't know. This is what this scholar says. This is what this scholar says. You guys have to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did that because, history changes. Like, if you, it's like a living, breathing thing,
mm-hmm.
because you're always finding new documents and things like that. So, for example, at the time I had heard of Andrea Radke Moss's work that she was doing on Missouri violence about Eliza R. Smith being possibly gang raped by the Missouri.
Eliza R. Snow.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So, there's this story about Eliza R. Snow that was circulated for a long time where Eliza, who had married Joseph Smith secretly behind Emma's back, she was in the mansion house and she was pregnant
mm-hmm.
with Joseph's
baby. Pushed down the stairs.
Yeah. And Eliza, and she kisses Joseph, and in a rage, Emma sees that and pushes her down the stairs. Now, there's a lot of problems with this. First of all, if Eliza, an unmarried woman, is pregnant, like, what's a kiss going to mean? You're going to know.
Right.
So there's a lot of problems, and some historians have actually gone and like measured the stairs. And anyway, so there's this big whole thing, but, and that's supposed to explain why she couldn't have children.
Mm-hmm.
And Andrea was working on this research that wasn't out at the time. So, like, you know, I'm glad that I knew about that kind of stuff to say, you know, some say that Eliza could have been a victim of, you know, mass violence, and that contributed to her infertility. Because as soon as the podcast is over, you get all these documents to come out. And so I do think that that's what's exciting about history. But if you get too, forgive me, married to a narrative,
mm-hmm.
then it could change with like one document.
Right.
You change everything you know, or add context to it. So I just wanted to be careful of that. So it wasn't until we got into the Utah period of Brigham Young, who I thought I understood, like mm-hmm. that was a polygamy I was okay with, that it really started to change my views on everything. Well, one of my favorite stories is what a lot of people don't know is something called the Mormon Reformation. And that was in the early times of the church being here. It was a wild, wild frontier. And it was crazy. Like, they had these Pentecostal ward meetings where you have Jebediah Grant, who was Heber J. Grant's father, and he was Brigham Young's counselor. And if you read his sermons from the Journal Discourses, I mean, they are insane. He gets at one point the whole tabernacle whipped up, and he tells them that they all have sins, and they're like, that they need to beat it out of each other. So they start taking reeds in the tabernacle, and they're like beating each other, and they're casting out devils. And like, it's just crazy stuff.
Cool. You try taking a nap through that meeting.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm like, where is this history even? And I mean, just like crazy stuff in the Mormon Reformation, crazy stuff. My favorite story is Brigham Young's son marries this woman, and she's beautiful. And the soldiers come in for the Steptoe Expedition. This is before what we know as Mormons is Johnston's army coming in the Utah War. But there's an expedition coming in to investigate an Indian massacre, and they come through Salt Lake City. And we have these great letters of one of these soldiers who is writing about falling in love with Brigham Young's daughter-in-law, right? And he is like, he's like secretly meeting her at dances, and she's a polygamous wife to Brigham's son, and they plot to escape, right? And Brigham finds out about it, puts a hit, according to the soldier, puts a hit on his life. He has to go hide in Tooele, and she has to, she's like holed up in the Lion House with guards, and they, like they're patrolling, and he tries one more escape attempt, and she's like, please take me, I want to go. But he knows that he's going to die. So he ends up taking, it's so awful, like a 14-year-old girl and her 17-year-old sister that he's like shacked up with in Tooele to California. But with the Steptoe Expedition, like soldiers at the time, a lot of women, you know, are now introduced to the principle of polygamy. They're living it. But everybody, for the most part, in Utah is in poverty. They're like hacking out the frontier, you know? So they're living out here. They're unhappy. So, and they're lonely. Polygamy is a lonely life for a lot of women. So these soldiers come in and they're dancing, and there's this big riot in the streets of like 100 men that are going to fight over the soldiers taking the women. And they end up taking a bunch of Mormon women with them, which is like the worst thing you can do. One of Heber J. Grant's wives gets taken, leaves with a soldier, right? It's like this seven brides for seven brothers things. It's crazy. And, but they, like, they're leaving willingly. They're not like kidnapped. They leave, and Heber, you can see Heber's rhetoric of women start to change. He gets a lot more sexist. He gets a lot more angry. You can see Brigham's rhetoric of women start to change. And you can see how, like, these events shape the way that these men saw outsiders, saw themselves, saw marriage. And it really, like, to me, I love it. Like, that is so great. But it's also makes me think, like, wow, polygamy is way more complex than we ever thought. It's not just a story of, like, women's heartache or whatever.
Right.
It's, like, shaping things. And so I say now that the Mormon church is a polygamous church. Like, it just is. And people are like, no, we don't practice it anymore. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, everything, like, we can, I shouldn't say everything, many, many, many key things we can trace to polygamy. They were either like a reaction to it, or, you know, a fallout, or a consequence of, or anything. Like, the Mormon church would not be what it is without polygamy.
Sure.
So that's like, that's exciting to me.
Yeah.
Because it's fun. It's interesting.
Let's take a break for a second and come back, and we'll keep going. Sounds good? All right. We'll come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, this is Dan, the laptop man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City, where all of our computers have been hand-built in Utah for over 21 years. I've got the most amazing deal on the planet for you. The PC Laptops S1 desktop computer. It's a PC Laptops desktop computer covered forever for $799. It has a blazing fast processor, so it's perfect for home, business, or back to school. A computer is only as good as its warranty. So how long is its warranty? 1 year? 10 years? Hang on. It's lifetime parts and labor, so everything is covered forever. Viruses, hard drives, RAM, everything. How much does it cost? $799. It's only $799. That's right. $799 for a blazing computer that's warranted forever. You have nothing to lose. Quantities are highly limited, so run into any one of our 8 locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. At PCLaptops.com, we love you.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. Still here with Lindsay Hanson Park. Now I just want to call you Park Lindsay. That really is a great designer name.
That can be like our thing.
That's like a designer name, though. Oh, are you wearing the latest Park Lindsay?
Yeah.
And I'll have to get a picture of you before you leave, because I like that outfit. It could be
designer.
That could be a unique Park Lindsay.
It's a Park Lindsay. It is, yeah.
Or like a pair of shoes or a purse. Oh, that's a Park Lindsay.
Yeah.
A bag. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. A bag. Do people... How do I want to phrase this? You work with Sunstone, and we'll get into that in a little bit for people who may not even know what that is. I know that there's a lot of people that go, huh? Heard of it. Don't know. But when you find yourself, and same with Feminist Mormon Housewives with what this question is. So let me just ask a question instead of prefacing it with a bunch of stuff. Do people sometimes not know where you stand?
Yeah, I think so. Which I'm fine with, because most of the time I don't even know where I stand. Like, I change my mind and new information comes and I shift, and so people want to know, are you active? Like, that is the question. And no, I'm not active. But I say I'm not active in the traditional sense. Like, I'm very active in the Mormon movement. And for most people, like, they've stopped listening. They're like, well, that's enough for me. She doesn't go to church.
Let me be bold. What's your deal?
What's my deal?
Yeah.
I love Mormonism. I just don't feel spiritually fed at church.
Okay.
And part of that is Right. But I've had this beautiful, wonderful experience now where my world has opened up to all these different people and religions. And so, like, I've gone to many churches where I'm like, this is incredible.
Right.
But I still feel a little bruised by religion. And that has to
what do you mean?
The history I could handle.
The history of the LDS church.
Yes. Okay. The history I could handle. It actually makes me feel tied to the church, as complicated as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the more complicated it is, the better I do. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, Joseph Smith was such a screw up. Like, I'm a screw up. That's awesome, you know?
Right. Whereas some people would be like, a screw up.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And so this idea and this culture that we have that's like, you know, this prophet worship, and our prophets we want to put on a pedestal, and we'll say things like, oh, we know that they're just men. But I don't think that we actually, like, really look at it. Like, what would we do if we found out, like, President Monson, you know, had some big, huge secret that came out in tabloid news? Like, would that make the church not true anymore?
Right.
And like, what does that even mean to have the church be true? And so all of those things, like, I've been able to unpack on my own, but it's not really something that is welcome or even sometimes possible in, like, a traditional LDS ward. So I'm not, like, saying that I am in or I'm out. There are some things that I think are severely wrong with the church culture, the organization, but there's some things I really value. And I feel like when I can get to a place where those things don't bother me as much, maybe I, you know, could go back to attending, or maybe I never will, but I'm just on a break. And I think I kind of do church my own way. If I want to go to church, I can show up at a ward house where I don't feel like I'm at the risk of, you know, being excommunicated by my leadership. And I should say that we moved, so it's different. But we had the same stake president for a long time, who was actually the bishop when I started this podcast. Always been supportive. Lovely, lovely man. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to denigrate, like, priesthood leadership as far as that goes. I got really lucky, but I also recognize that that is not the case for a lot of people. Like, people could be excommunicated for a lot less than what I've done. And so I just want to be able to own my Mormonism and not have it really defined for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like excommunication is designed to do that in a lot of ways.
To define it for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so those things like excommunication, which I am very much in disagreement with. I think it's
in general, no matter
just
what.
In general, I do. I think
kid
it's
toucher, not uh-huh. excommunicated.
Yeah, especially because it's so inconsistent. Like, we don't. There's a lot of examples of that. You know, abuse where people are not excommunicated and it's not handled properly.
Better if it's just a blanket thing.
I think it's a spiritually violent practice. I think punishment and discipline and getting the law involved is one thing. I'm not saying no accountability, but I think to tell someone you're cutting them off from their family and their ordinances goes against, like, what Christ taught and goes against grace, which we're not really good at as Mormons.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's just stuff like that. Like, I just find, and the beauty of that. So, you know, people will hear me and they'll be like, but what about this? What about the scripture? What about this? What this prophet said?
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of this polygamy stuff is you realize, like, all the times the prophets contradicted themselves, all the times they got it wrong, all the times they made a prophecy and it didn't happen. And so, like, when people say, but what about this? What about this? I'll be like, oh yeah, well, how do we know that that's going to happen? Like, you can believe it and that's great, but history shows us a different story.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows us that it's messy. And so, like, my gospel is a gospel of messiness. Do you know what I'm saying? Because
mm-hmm.
that's what I think it is. And I'll talk to a lot of ex-Mormons who are really angry. I do a lot of work with ex-Mormons, too. And I'll say, like, you know what? Like, if you are happier out of the church, like, what a gift that Joseph Smith was such a mess up. Because if he wasn't, you'd be back in church right now. Like,
mm-hmm.
what would you have? You would, if this is happiness, like, that set you free. Like, be grateful for that. And I'm hoping that church culture moves into a more, I guess the word is, like, heteroprax, you know, sort of church. But I just feel like we need to be way more open in our communities in general about our mistakes, about other people's mistakes, about our mistakes as a church.
Mm-hmm.
And once we can do that, that will be a healthy spiritual community. And I will feel more responsible about like letting my kids engage in that. And if that
makes
sense.
Feel like that's something that's existing right now? I think that it's certainly going in that direction.
I think there are definitely big strides being taken, like the essays. That's a great first step.
Sure.
However, how the essays were framed, it's still like in retrenchment. And I guess like, I wouldn't.
Those essays, obviously, for people that maybe hear that reference, the essays that, there's a dozen? 10? 11?
There's 10, I think.
10?
Which I've heard that there's, like, plans to release more,
mm-hmm.
but then I don't know if they shut that down.
But they're available at LDS.org. Well, and even with some of those being received, like, you hear about that guy who taught from the essays,
like about, seminary teacher. And,
yeah, about the priesthood, right? Was it in a seminary teacher
yeah,
or was it a
like,
Sunday school?
Shut it down.
And they're like, hey, what? You know, where did you get this? He's like, LDS.org. And he got released from his calling. It wasn't a seminary teacher.
There are several stories of that. And, so the essays, what they do is they tackle difficult, complicated church issues
mm-hmm.
with the explanation of, you know, before, like when I was struggling with polygamy, you would go and search LDS.org for polygamy. Nothing.
Right.
Like, not a hit. Actually, later on before the essays, there was one hit that came up, which was like an interview that linked to like something President Hinckley had said.
Mm-hmm.
But since now, there's like the church has written 3 essays on polygamy.
Right.
Joseph Smith's, the Utah period, and then like, I want to say like just the general like topic of polygamy,
yeah.
which is great. However, like there are some problems with it. Like, I'll just give you one example, and maybe they've changed this since I've been like pretty public about this. They're like, you know, some people did it, practice polygamy for the widows or whatever the, you know, the standard line that we're
sure.
used to taught. And there's a footnote. And if you click on the footnote and it said to have more children, and there's a footnote and you look in the footnote and it actually says, actually, studies have shown that is not the case. So,
but they included it in the thing, but
they
had
included
it
in the footnote,
yeah.
which is good. And so, and I can't say enough good things about the church history department. Like, I know those guys, like they have let me in. They are good, good people, like good, ethical, fantastic professional historians. So like, I feel like the history is in good hands. It hasn't always been,
mm-hmm.
but it is now. Like, I have a lot of faith in those guys and like,
and women now. There's 4 women serving in the
there are and they're
the
doing
church
amazing
department.
Stuff. Like, they're excavating, as Maxine Hinks would say, like these stories. And it's important because, you know, for me to have women represented in history, like when we're talking about this messiness and Joseph, like, it's so great to know that pioneer women weren't always strong and like weren't always like
and didn't always
they buried
not
their
walk
babies
with shoes
and then they yeah. walked with no shoes and then they still had faith. Like, no, they didn't. Like, that's not how it happened. Just like it's not how it happens in real life. Like, women did those things and sometimes they had faith. Sometimes they cheated on their husband with the soldier and sometimes they came back. Sometimes they stuck it out. Sometimes they had mental illness. Sometimes they, you know, got in a fist fight and broke another wife's arm. Like, I'm not advocating for any of that, but I'm just saying, like, wow, people are people and they always have been.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what a gift that is that we get to know that. And I think it's a generational thing, you know, that we want, the church has a reason for wanting to be clean and shiny. If you
sure.
look at the history, right, that's how they survived. They had a lot of persecution that actually threatened their actual existence. I mean, when we talk about the manifesto with polygamy, so a lot of people don't know this either. There are several manifestos the church put out with polygamy. But the first one, the one that everyone knows, is the 1890 manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why that was even put out was they were going to seize the temple and the endowment house and take away all their property. Like, the federal government was going to seize that in a way that had never, that's unprecedented. And so, yeah, I get why we had to be on our best behavior.
Sure.
But things are different now.
Well, and things have to be so much different now because of, and I always sound like I'm 100 years old, but now with the internet, I mean,
yeah.
in order to survive now, the church has to almost 180 degrees embrace everything. Embrace
yeah.
that messiness. I know people listening to you when you say Joseph Smith is a mess up, even as me as being a
like,
true
no,
believer, it's like, ah!
But that's the thing, but, like, that's
but I
my
see
testimony.
I see what you're saying. It's not, you know, he's this fallen prophet and he's a horrible, it's just, he's a real person.
He's a real person. And like, that is, I think, the danger in, like, when we talk about modern polygamous groups and some of the abuse that happens, the sickness in those communities is this idea that your prophet is infallible. And every polygamous group now has, the same sort of narratives about Joseph and about John Taylor and then about Joseph Musser and Leroy Johnson and all of their polygamous, you know, leaders. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't think that, you know, they were mess ups and everything they did was on par. And you would never say that, like, Joseph Musser was a mess up, right? Mm-hmm. Or Reuland Jeffs was a mess up. Reuland Jeffs, like, he was married to Hubie Brown's daughter. And
Reuland Jeffs, just to give people context, because I'm not sure that everyone knows, Reuland Jeffs is Warren Jeffs' father.
Yeah, he was the
leader. And Hubie Brown was a member of the 12 Apostles, correct? Or was he 70?
He was, well, he when he knew Reuland, he was in the 70. I'm trying to think if he was never, I don't remember.
Okay, I don't know for sure either.
I have to look at my stuff. But this is the thing. It's hard for, so the ex-Mormon critique would be like, the church is lying to us and they're trying to hide this stuff. And I don't think that's true either. Like, if, again, if you look at the history of polygamy and how polygamy has fundamentally shaped the church, there are reasons why the church had to move away from doctrine, like the Adam God doctrine that we don't talk about anymore.
What's that?
Yeah, it's, and do you, are you, you want me to talk?
Let people know.
So Adam God doctrine was a frontier doctrine that was taught. It was propagated. We cannot trace it back to Joseph Smith yet. There are some scholars that think that there are some roots and in the Council of 50 Minutes and all that. But really, it was a Brigham Young doctrine. And it's the idea that Adam, you know, the first father married mm-hmm. to Eve, was also God, Elohim. And so, like, if you look at the temple ceremony in that context, that changes things. And that Eve was the mother of our earth.
Mm-hmm.
But God has many earths, so he has many wives and many Eves, and they were. But Eve happened to be our polygamous mother.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really polygamous doctrine. And actually, it's still believed by most fundamentalist groups. And it was taught up until about the 60s with correlation, which is also a reaction to a lot of polygamy and things like that. But we kind of have moved away from it. But I have heard tell, and this is, like, you know, from scholars like Brent Metcalf and things, who say that they have talked to church apostles that say, oh, no, we still believe it, but we can't teach it, because if we teach it, then people will, you know, become fundamentalists, which is absolutely the case. This is, you know, this is how fundamentalism happens. People will be, you know, wanting to dig in deeper, read about Adam God doctrine or some of these other polygamous doctrines and be like, wait a minute. Why have we never heard about this before? Right. Here's Joseph Smith writing this about, or Brigham Young or John Taylor, and why aren't we talking about this? And they are steered towards fundamentalism.
Yeah.
And people don't know that either. The AUB, Brian Hills estimated 19...
That's the All Red United Brethren.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. That's the group from Sister Wives, the mm-hmm. TLC show Sister Wives. They're from the All Red United Brethren group. Apostolic United Brethren.
That's right.
I called it wrong on the show the other day. Or the All Red group.
Yeah.
So that's why it's confusing. But Brian Hill said in 1998... The LDS Church was losing 20 families a month to convert baptisms to the AUB. So 20 were leaving a month and joining the AUB.
Mm-hmm.
And another example of that is, I feel like I'm jumping around, but when, for a long time, the fundamentalist movement really starts in the 30s, 1930s, and down in, like, what we call Short Creek, which is Colorado City and Hilldale.
Southern Utah.
And as it expands out, like, we have all these different groups, but for a long time, for decades and decades, fundamentalists would teach their kids this rote prayer. So they would teach their kids to face the temple, the LDS temple, and say this prayer that would be like, you know, we pray that your doors will be open to us and the church will be set in order, or whatever the wording was. When the priesthood ban was lifted in the 1970s by the LDS Church, most fundamentalist groups stopped saying that prayer because they believed that the church was truly corrupt, truly tainted. And that's when the AUB group built their own temple
mm-hmm.
and other groups like the FLDS started their own endowment houses, because now the church was really fallen because they ordained, you know, men of African descent and let black women into the temple. And so according to some scholars like Brian Hills, they said that convert baptisms to the AUB tripled that year, tripled sure. from the LDS church. So they got all of our races, I guess. So, yeah, just stuff like that is like, this is the history that I'm talking about, that like it's going on around us and people don't know. And, you know, back to the essay question that we were talking about, you're saying like, you know, that it's hard for the church to be open. And I don't think the church is lying to us, but they have this tension of like, if they have this history, some people will go to fundamentalism.
Sure.
They'll say, wait a minute, if I look at the history of how polygamy went away, and you have the manifesto, and then you have Wilford Woodruff marrying women after he issues the manifesto, and then they have to issue another manifesto, and the apostles are fighting, and some apostles are secretly, you know, sanctioning marriages while others are excommunicating those people. Like, what is it? It's so messy. And you have people that want to go towards that, right?
Right.
And the church has a responsibility now to stay away from that. I mean, they have a federal responsibility to stay right. away from that and all this other historical baggage. But you also have, like, we do an episode towards end where I connect all the current leadership mm-hmm. with polygamy. So, you know, Reuland Jeffs, Warren Jeffs' father, he went to high school with Gordon B. Hinckley. They went to the same high school. He married, you know, Hubie Brown's daughter for a time, and he was mission companions with Cleon Skousen. And when,
jeez.
Yeah, when, you know, John W. Woolley is an apostle and he's excommunicated, he is replaced by, certain people in the leadership. All of these men, with the exception of Thomas Monson, have a direct link to polygamy, whether they were excommunicating polygamists or Spencer W. Kimball, who had a hit on him from the polygamist LeBarons. They put an actual death hit on him and actually killed another fundamentalist prophet, Rulin Allred from the AUB. Like, all of these men have a history with polygamy that we don't really talk about. And so it makes sense why this would be a topic that they don't, that they feel very strongly invested in not bringing up or not talking about. And I just feel like knowing the history gives us compassion for that too.
Don't you feel, let me not phrase it that way. I am fascinated by what you say. And I think that there are a lot of people that do not know the things that you know. Be it about polygamy or just about church history in general. Unfortunately, as you addressed, I think that several people at the point that you said, I'm not active, mm-hmm. sort of discount or discredit where it is that you would come
sure.
from.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that.
I find a tremendous responsibility for myself with questions that I may have about various subjects, not necessarily polygamy, although certainly some, or certainly some beliefs about polygamy or women in the priesthood and some of these other things. I find a tremendous responsibility for myself. How do I put this? This will be messy, however I say this.
Sure.
So let me preface this.
I like
this.
Messy. I told you.
And that's why I say messy, because I know that you'll like it, but you may not like it. Like, I feel a tremendous responsibility to align myself with those that are active and to consider myself active so that I feel like I can,
have a voice
and be a voice for change.
Yeah.
Because it's terrible and I don't agree with it, but I think at the point that we say, you know, this person's excommunicated, this person's inactive or whatever, regardless of whatever you say beyond that point, I've lumped you into a group and I go, I got to be careful
yeah.
because inactive, you know, Lindsay Hanson Park, she's talking about, you know, hanging out with Kate Kelly, and Kate Kelly was excommunicated. So how do I know she's not just, you know, toeing the tainted line?
Yeah, I think that's a very common thing. And like you, I strongly disagree with it, but I absolutely understand how it happens.
Right.
And again, I have an appreciation for it because this is another thing, you know, ex-Mormons like to say, like, oh my gosh, so many people are leaving the church now. And I'm like, you guys, people have always been leaving the church.
Right.
Like, there are stories of, like, seriously, Brigham Young, at one point, people were so scared of him during the Utah period that there are stories of people making it to the fort up in Idaho barefoot and bleeding because they left with nothing because it was all part of the church. They mm-hmm. were so terrified for their lives that they flee. Like, this has always been happening. But this narrative, this term of apostate, the way that it gets used, I feel like I understand it. I understand the mechanism of it, mm-hmm. the utility of it. And what it essentially does is it is a way to, you know, keep members safe, right? Safe from anyone who might challenge the faith. And if the faith is the most important thing, the faith is the thing that saves you.
Right.
Why would you want anyone to align themselves or spend any time with apostates? Of course, you know, there's this contradiction in the Bible of Christ hung out with the people in the margins. He hung out with
sure.
the sinners and I would think the apostates, because that's essentially who Jesus was, right? Like he was this radical that sort of shook things up in a lot of ways, but I get it. Like I totally get it. And if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. Like everyone, especially women in the church, we have less currency than men. So women have to align their power in a way that they can to get done what they can.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it works. I don't agree with it. I see it used abusively in other fundamentalist traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I wish people would understand more. Like, if you really want to understand our own church, you got to understand these other churches because they really show us a lot about themselves. And one of the things that I've learned when I go down to like Colorado City and I work with fundamentalists, of course I disagree with a lot of their like politics and a mm-hmm. lot of their beliefs, but they're my people because they have been hurt by Warren Jeffs or by the group and they've had to claim their own Mormonism, right? And even the faithful, they have been sent away from the LDS church for decades, almost a century.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to tell them they're not Mormon. Like they claim it. And so for me, Mormonism is so much bigger than the LDS church. Like I know they've tried to trademark Mormon,
right.
but that's just not what the history shows. Like
right.
that is just not the truth. Like it might be our truth and like our identity and that's fine. And that's important, but that isn't the whole story. And so down in Short Creek, a lot of these people that have been sent away, they call themselves independent. That's a term that they use. Are you FLDS? No, I'm independent. And I'm like, I like that. That's me. Like mm-hmm. I'm independent LDS. That's what I am. And I get that a lot of people don't recognize that. And like, that's okay. I don't need them to.
Right.
There was a time when I did,
mm-hmm.
but I think I'm unique in that I hang out with faithful people. I hang out with people like you that like will talk and give me a platform. Maybe that's too scary to your listeners. Not give me a platform, but you'll have a conversation with
sure.
me.
Sure. And the reason why, so let me speak to this real quick and then I'll let you continue. The reason why is because I feel like faith is more like a muscle. And if I don't challenge it, if I don't give it things to think on or things, mm-hmm. you know, to stretch and to grow, like a muscle that if you lay in bed all the time becomes atrophied, you lose strength in it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not so bold and so brave that I've ventured into a lot of things. I haven't because I know where my limits are.
Sure.
And I kind of nibble here and there and go, okay, that's enough. That's, you know, I've strengthened that enough. And now I need to really, for me, I feel like I really need to shore up those things that I know. And then I can kind of venture in or let me learn a little bit more about this thing that I didn't know or that this group of people are talking about or that this thing or, you know, whatever those things are. But I know very individually where my faith is, but I do have to exercise or challenge it.
Well, and we anyway. Call that like line upon line, right?
Right.
Like you're
right.
not going to have the whole thing, and which is totally fine. And for me, faith is not a noun. This is what I try to tell like a lot of my friends. Like faith to me growing up was you had it or you didn't.
Right.
It was something you had or you didn't. And I'm like, no, faith is a verb. Like it's something that you're doing. Like it's this organic thing that you're trying. Like you're trying. And I feel like I'm trying. Like I'm always trying. And because my faith doesn't align with what people would say are obedient principles, like the behaviors maybe, mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. Like I feel like if that's not okay for other people, if they want to express their faith by, you know, wearing the white shirt on Sunday or, you know, making sure that they go to the temple weekly, like I'm totally cool with that. I'm also fine with, you know, doing my own thing on Sundays or going to a ward where I want to go to a ward, you know, and feel like expressing Mormonism the way that I want to express it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people can tell me that I'm not Mormon and like, that's just not the truth.
Right.
Like I'm very Mormon. I'm very active in the Mormon community. I am very aligned with Mormons. They're my people. Like, you see me, I'm drinking a Diet Coke. Like, I'm culturally Mormon, too,
listen.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
So I, like, that's just who I am. And I had, you know, 30 plus years in Mormonism. Like, you don't, it doesn't, like Joanna Brooks says, it doesn't wash off.
Mm-hmm.
And for people that thinks that it can, like, I would ask them to reevaluate their faith. Like, if you believe that a Mormon experience and the Mormon faith is so easily offable of people, that it's not that your spirit can just like change like that. Like, maybe you need to rethink that, because that doesn't align with my experience at all whatsoever. And so I get it. People have to do what they have to do. And if you need that identity, like if you need those rules and that's what keeps you safe, I respect it. But there's a whole world out there of other people that live Mormonism in a completely different way. And that is what, you know, learning about this history has shown me.
Mm-hmm.
That Mormonism, you know, like Brigham Young's Mormonism would hardly be recognizable now. And in some ways it was terrifying.
Right.
But it served the purpose that it served at the time. I mean, Brigham Young got stuff done. And he didn't do it in ways that we would give our prophets a pass for now. But it worked. Like, he held that church together. And so, like, his Mormonism is not the same as, like, our Mormonism now, modern Mormonism. It's very similar to, like, you know, the Centennial Park group. You know, they like to, well, that's complicated. But that's what I'm saying. There's so many different Mormon narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with Mormonism right now in general, and I'm talking about all the groups, I'm talking the FLDS, I'm talking the Kingston group, I'm talking with the LDS church, is we have this one true narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have this one truth narrative, it really doesn't let people learn to grow, because there's only one truth. And I don't think that's how Joseph Smith saw Mormonism. That's clearly not how he saw Mormonism. I think that allows us to sort of shun diversity when we have one truth. And so, like, I'm not a one truth Mormon.
Okay.
You know, like, I'm a messy Mormon. I'm an independent Mormon. So, like, if people don't accept that, I don't need them to, you know. And they, like, I can hear people out there being like, oh, she's justifying a lot of stuff. Like, that's okay, you know. I would just point to the history. The history shows otherwise.
Let's take a break for a second. We'll come back in the third block, and I want to get to know a little bit more about you. You specifically. Not all your Mormon history stuff. You.
That's all there is.
We'll come back and do that in the third block of the Culture Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the third block of the Culture Hall, and we'll wrap this out here in just a few minutes. So, obviously, you're still married.
Yep.
So, you worked that out.
Worked that out. He stuck by me.
Does your husband feel similarly?
He does. I mean, he's a little sick of Mormonism. Like,
oh,
he would say I'm a little too active in Mormonism. His whole worldview has been radically changed. So you got to think about us as like, I'm the stay-at-home mom, like preschool teacher out of my home, and we have kids, and like that was our life. Like, I was in Young Women's, and he was in the Elders Quorum Presidency, and we did that thing.
And that's legitimate. That's how it was.
That's legitimately how it was.
Okay.
Like, we were like plugging along on the program, and then
checking boxes,
and like, it was a good life for us. It's not like it didn't work. I mean, there were things about it, like with everything, that didn't work, but it was fine.
Right.
And then this like exploded, and I become this feminist blogger, and then I'm hanging out with people like Kate Kelly and, you know, fundamentalists.
How's her laptop, by the way? Why don't you ask her?
I'll ask
inside
her.
Inside joke.
Sure,
I'm not really asking.
You know, we're going down to, you know, fundamentalist groups, and we're involved in federal investigations, and like, just like crazy, crazy stuff that we never thought we would be involved in. And I would say, like, it has also cost us a lot of relationships. Like, we had, it was not an easy road with both of our families. We're sort of working on repairing that now.
Mm-hmm. Just family thinking that you've lost the faith and, that kind of thing, or what?
Yeah. I mean, we had, I don't want to get into it because, full disclosure, I handled some things poorly. Like, my strategy
was, you're
like,
messy. You like messy.
I was just like, if you guys will just listen, let me just tell you, like, this is why I'm trying to do it. And that's just not how this works. So it was poorly done. And I would say that, like, if you're going to question the church, like, it's probably not a good idea to do, like, start a podcast and, like, do 100 episodes on Mormon polygamy. Totally regular, right? Yeah. That's totally what people do. So I get why that was challenging for a lot of people. One of the things I have shared publicly is I was a preschool teacher, very successful. I'd done it for 10 years. My mom had done it. My sisters do it. Everyone in my family are educators. And it was when I started actually questioning gay marriage online. I wasn't even blogging yet. Mm-hmm. But they started, a group of women in the neighborhood organized a ban against my preschool. And they all, like, pulled their kids out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really painful.
Sure.
But that was sort of the start of the transition. And this is what I'm talking about. It's like the history, these problems with the church, that I could handle. But, like, being shunned when you're hurting.
Right.
There's nothing like it. Like, and so when people who
there's
claim,
nothing like it, try
there's
it.
There's nothing like it. Nah. Everybody go do it. Start a podcast. It's painful. It took me a few years before I could even talk about it without sort of tearing up, because I loved my life. Like, I was good at that. That's what I did. I was really proud of it. And so that was hard. And I don't want to sound like a victim. Like, I understand why that happened. You know, when this happened, people needed a hard surface to strike against. Like, you know, they knew they had to stand up against gay marriage. They had heard some fringy things that I was probably saying in support of it, and they needed a hard surface to strike against. And so they saw that in me. And so I understand how it happened. Like, I don't agree with it, but I can sympathize. So that happened, and it just kind of, like, from there, you know, once you disappoint people so much, like, you're at the lowest point. There's really no further you can go.
Right.
And there's some power in that. Like, that's what I'm finding. Like, I'm the crazy lady that goes down and hangs out with polygamists and, like, talks about it publicly. Like, it doesn't get stranger than that. Like, it really doesn't. And so that gives me a lot of flexibility. And I think it's made me grow a thick skin, which, as a Mormon woman, one of my biggest problems was I cared what everybody thought. You know, I worried about, you know, I would stand up in church and I would say something, and then after I would ruminate about it for hours. Oh my gosh, did I say too much? Did I say the wrong thing? I don't think that anymore. I just am claiming my voice, and I'm meeting other women that are doing that. And my world has, like, burst open into exciting, amazing things. Like, I was just in London with Tyler Glenn, like, hanging out with the neon trees in, like, London for 10 days. Like, I never would be doing that if I hadn't just, like, spoken out and taken this. And I have met, like, I had dinner with Winston Blackmore, who is the one of the biggest fundamentalist leaders in Canada. I ate at a Red Lobster in Salt Lake City with Winston Blackmore and two of his wives. Like, who gets to do stuff like that?
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not for everybody.
Sure.
But it's an amazing life. Like, it's such an amazing life. And I think the beauty of it for me is that I still get to claim my Mormon people and explore sort of in this sort of way. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. It's been painful and it's been hard. And, like, we lost a lot, and that transition was hard, but it's, like, the world is big and beautiful.
Well, and the thing that I think is so beautiful about what you said is you don't know where it ends. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a constant adventure, and where you started with your podcast or your blogging is not where you are now.
No, absolutely not. And that's the beauty about it. Like I said, this one true narrative, like, that's not how life works. Like, there's not one true thing. And Joseph Smith wasn't one true thing. And Brigham Young wasn't one true thing. And Thomas Monson isn't one thing. That is, I think, the sort of story that I bought into that I don't necessarily think even Mormonism gave to me. I don't know if it's a product of, like, immaturity or just society, but I just thought, like, I'm a preschool teacher and a Mormon wife, and that's who I am.
Uh-huh.
And that's, like, there's 100 other things inside of me, like, waiting to come out. And I think the difference was I finally found something that gave me permission to, like, accept that. And for me, it was the history. Seeing the, you know, the mistakes and like the triumphs and the beauty and the faith of these people and how messy it was, that gave me permission to do some of this stuff. And so, yeah, it's,
but it's a difficult thing. You know, you talk about the one true narrative. It's a different, it's a difficult thing for people to wrap their heads around that there wouldn't be a one true narrative.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, no, I get that.
I mean, even
that's
as we
safe,
talk,
right?
I go, do I agree with her or do I disagree with what she's saying? I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, okay, well, I know that things are messy. I know that there's huge mess ups and, you know, I'm in agreement with what you're saying there. But then I think, well, you know, but is there a truth and is there things that aren't true, right?
Like, I would say it's like,
is there a mode of baptism that I need to be baptized by a certain authority, or does that fall into a one true narrative kind of thing?
See, and I love that you asked that, because I think that that is faith, like constantly unpacking these things. If you're really going to claim it for yourself, claim it for yourself.
Right.
Like, and you can't, there are just some things that you can't know, regardless of what anyone says, on other people's knowledge.
Right.
Like, that is what I learned with this polygamy thing. Like, I knew I couldn't stop myself. I knew I wanted to, but I couldn't. And there gets a point in every person's life where there's one thing that they know about themselves that you can't deny any longer. And instead of being afraid of that, I think that that is like the point of beauty, right? That is the point where your life really begins, at least in my case. And so, I think it's this one true thing. It's not a but. It's like, well, the church is true, but nothing else is. It's an and. It's like there can be one truth for you and one truth for someone else that like bumps up against yours. And like for me, like that's the heart of the gospel. Like that is being in relationship and covenant with people that challenge me and like being down in Colorado City where these people believe something that I consider sexist and misogynist and deeply abusive, like, but they're my people. Like, I love those people because we can be in relationship with each other and not try to change people. And I think that is like how we know that our community is safe. Like, if we can be who we are and like figure it out, great. If we're trying to change other people, then we become unsafe.
Hmm.
And I've learned that from personal experience. Like, I don't go down to Colorado City to be like, polygamy is wrong and you need to change.
Sure.
That's
they wouldn't
not what
let
I'm,
you in.
They wouldn't let me in. And like these guys know their history better than Mormons. Like, if you're going to try to tell them that, you know, you've got the truth, they have a very different perspective. And honestly, they come by it honestly. That was the biggest surprise for me with this polygamy thing. It was like, those guys are crazy. They're misguided. Like, why is it? We have to ask ourselves, why is it that people do that? Like, why is it we think that they're doing that? Do we think it's Satan in their head? And if that's the case, like, think that one through to its logical conclusion and see where that goes. And, or do we think that they want to be in like, they want to be the weirdos, like living polygamy in Southern Utah. Is I think that one through.
Right.
The reality is they come by it honestly. The history shows us how messy it is. And so you're talking about this like one ordinance of baptism. If you know about the history of baptism, of the priesthood secession crisis, how Brigham Young even got the priesthood, it's messy. And that is why there are so many breakoffs of Mormonism.
Right.
Secession and priesthood is such a messy thing. And so for me, like, if that one way of baptism is your way of expressing your faith and brings you closer to God, that is fantastic. But the record tells us a different story. The record tells us it's more complicated. And the record doesn't necessarily say that your story is not the true story.
Sure.
But it also doesn't say that theirs isn't true either. If that makes any sense, it's kind of coded, but I'll just give you the story of like the manifesto really quick. Like, FLDS started because John Taylor said over and over, polygamy will never be taken off the earth.
Right.
And John Taylor is like a fundamentalist hero. He was like running away from the law and like hiding in like the Gardo house that he was living in, had secret passageways and all this cool stuff. He was like doing that. And then they had to give up polygamy. And John Taylor has revelations in his hand where he's giving these keys to other men to keep it alive. So like, and they've been like documented to be in his hand, like verified. So what does that mean? Like, what does that say about our narrative? It doesn't mean your narrative isn't true.
Right.
But like, it's great to let it be challenged a little bit. Like you said, it lets you flex that muscle. And I feel like if your answer is defensive, like, if you're like, well, they must be lying, or like, they must have made it up, or like, maybe like, you know, John Taylor was possessed by Satan when he wrote it, whatever. That maybe that narrative that keeps the one, that your one truth, that maybe that one truth needs to be like held up and looked at for you. Because to me, like, faith is not defensiveness. It's like more of a peace. You know, they say fear is the opposite of faith. And to me, defensiveness is that feeling of fear. Like, no, don't take that away from me. Don't take that away from me. Or you're wrong. To me, faith is like, can I hold this up? Can I look at this? What do I think about this? And, I don't know what your question was. I got rambling.
No, you're fine. Let's do this. Where can people find more of you? Obviously, you still do stuff for Feminist Mormon Housewives, and that's feministmormonhousewives.org?
feministmormonhousewivespodcast.org or feministmormonhousewives.com .org. Or you can go to yearpolygamy.com. We have the 100 episodes. I tell everyone to go in order. Start. It's very important to go in order. I'm kind of terrible about that. Or you can come to Sunstone.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't even talk about that at all. So no. I'm going to give you literally only 60 seconds to talk about Sunstone.
Okay, Sunstone is just a forum that's been around for 40 years where people can talk about Mormonism, all of it. Like, and it's the only place that I know of that people from all across the spectrum and all across this restoration traditions can come together and talk. So it's like Education Week, but with Mormon scholars and historians. And, you know, you have people from the FLDS that come in Centennial Park and the RLDS Emma's Church. It's great. And we do it in the summer, end of July. Go to sunstone.org and you can check it out.
Cool. And you guys do publications too?
We do a magazine. Yep. We do a magazine and we do different conferences where we explore Mormonism. Our only thing is we ask people to do it respectfully. So you can have whatever opinion you want.
Just don't be a jerk about it.
Yeah. Don't attack people. Yeah.
I always love that. You can do whatever you want. Just don't be a jerk.
Don't be a jerk about it.
That's sunstone.org.
.org.
Mm-hmm. And then if they want to follow you personally, do you do anything that, like Twitter or anything like that?
Well, we are going to Colorado City on April 30th to do a service project.
Cool.
We're going to fix up some homes in Colorado City. If you want to know more about that you can go to the fernfoundation.org.
Fern?
Fern. F-E-R-N.
Okay.
It's my Utah accent. Fern Foundation.
What does that sound for?
It's an organization we set up. It's like female empowerment. Empowering women, basically. Okay. But you
so
can
it's
donate.
It's a woman thing. Got it.
Well, it's
no
not
dudes.
Just for
no,
women.
It's cool.
No, it's not
super
just for
sexist.
Women.
That's awesome.
That's how we roll. But yeah, I
empower
would
us, but we're not letting you come. No, it's fine. Don't worry
no
about
dudes.
It.
No dudes. No dudes.
You dudes get to do plenty of stuff, so we're going to do women only on this trip.
Actually, we take dudes, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
On that thing?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay.
It's so fun.
It really did make it sound like you were only allowing women to come.
No,
and that's the kind of stuff I
hate. It's about empowering women, like, through education.
Okay,
so,
great.
Like, the foundation is there, but, like, we have men on our board.
Good. Good.
Because
there's nothing that drives me more crazy than people that are like, hey, you know what? We're this group, and we want to be all about inclusion, and you guys can't come.
No, it's not about that. We're just helping women with resources.
Awesome.
Down in the creek. So.
And that's April 30th?
April 30th, yep. So
people
can
do that.
Come. Yep.
And then.
Or on Facebook. You can find me, Lindsay Hanson Park on Facebook.
And then I don't know that you've done this yet, so I'm recommending you do it as soon as we get done, that you get the Park Lindsay.
.com.
At Park Lindsay and parklindsay.com. If
Let's
you haven't
lock
done that
it
yet.
Down.
Yeah, please.
I'm going to start my own fashion line so you guys can find me there.
Oh, yeah.
Handbags and purses.
Yeah. Scripture handbags. Go for that market. And have it be
and bonnets.
And have it be scriptures of all kinds. So it's Quran and
so
the,
it's super
the Torah.
Messy, just like
yeah.
me.
Yeah. 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 And there's no organization to it at all. It's just messy.
Sounds good. I like it.
Comes with its own papers of mess. So we ask everyone that steps into the Culture Hall three questions. One, I already know the answer to. Do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it? And you obviously don't have a calling right now.
I don't. Last I had a calling, I was the bulletin board coordinator.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That's important. That's an overlooked calling of importance.
It was. I rocked it.
I don't doubt it. Yeah. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Oh, man. I love serving the young women's.
Yeah?
That was pretty cool.
11 to 12, 12, 13.
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
I like kids. I don't know. Just like I'm one of those Mormons that's happy to help wherever.
And then finally, the last question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
I think I answered that, but like the messiness. That's I have a testimony of the messiness of the human experience. And Mormonism is a good template for that, if we allow it to be. So.
And then finally, we wrap it out like this. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body. And if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. When the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. Mm-hmm. Do you have any others that you hear often that you'd like to share? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Wow, you're really making me dig deep. Well, this is fundamentalist language. I'll give you an LDS one, and it says, keep sweet, everybody. Keep sweet.
And I hear that, and I think of this audio I've heard of Warren Jeff saying, keep sweet, and I... in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.